told you it was going to be easy. Okay. Now that we got the trees planted, we know what we're going to cut. It's time to cut them, so that means we got to get somebody to cut them, and that means you get a logger. Over the years, logging's really changed from the stereotype of the black and red lumberjacketed person with peg trousers and a crosscut two-man saw. And today we want to be able to talk with Mr. Varnes and Billy Bryan, Eugene Baxley, Tony Baxley, Danny Baxley, got it right this time, and Sam Baker, all who have been involved in logging pretty much most of their lives. Billy, could you tell us a little bit about, you've been logging ever since you were a kid, is that right?
That's right.
How did it start, how did you start out, and what kinds of tools did you use then? Can you then tell us a little bit about the kinds of tools you use now?
Well, we started out, they always just made us trim with a club axe. You know, we're just youngins.
Mm-hmm.
We'd use the axe to trim up small trees and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And cleaned out roads and just, you know, whatever you could do, that's what you done.
Uh-huh.
And went from axe to a chainsaw, from chainsaw to skidders and loaders, and just got bigger and bigger.
So it ends up, basically now it's become a pretty complicated business with a lot of kinds of equipment. What kinds of equipment is there, Tony? You work with chippers as well, right?
Yeah.
So what are the basic kinds of equipment a logging team would use?
Skidders, loaders, saws, shears, trailer mushers. We got truck and trailers. We got van trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Those, all our trailers let you load from the back.
Right.
Pull up on a ramp.
Right, yeah.
Slides out the back.
That's right. They tilt right up. The word feller buncher, I don't know if anybody here is really familiar with that term. Could you, Danny, you want to explain it? What a feller buncher
is?
Yeah,
your typical feller buncher is a big four-wheel drive machine, similar to a front-end loader, except it's got protective guarding on it, belly pans and screens around your cab and engine. And instead of having a dirt bucket on it, it has a big tree shear. It's got two big blades on it with hydraulic cylinders. It goes up and clamps hold a tree, and the cylinders push the blades through the tree, and it cuts the tree off.
Mm-hmm. So, like, snips it off at the bottom?
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then what happens? Does it just sort of fall down?
Or? Well, it holds that tree, and then you can cut two or three more, depending on the size of the tree you're cutting. And then you throw them down in a pile, mm-hmm. and then go back and cut two or three, four or five more, whatever, and put in another pile.
And how does the skidder actually, the skidder is used to take those trees, correct?
Right.
How does the skidder work?
A grapple skidder, you back up to it, and it's got a grapple on it where you open up a set of tongs and let them down over the wood, and then grapple it, pick them up, and pull them out to your knuckle boom loader and load them.
Okay, and then the loader's got grapples on it too, is that
yeah.
right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you run that.
Right.
What do you do? You have to really, it's like you cut down all of these trees, and then you load them. You load them into trucks, is that it?
Yeah, normally a knuckle boom loader sets in a stationary position. You drag the trees to it on one side, and your truck's sitting on the other side, and you just pick the logs up and swing around and set them on your truck.
Mm-hmm. Is it like sort of, it would seem kind of like a real balancing act.
Yeah. Kinda, yeah.
What kinds of things do you look out for when you're doing that?
You got what you call a heel on your boom, where when you pick the logs up, you balance it in the heel and catch it and just heel them over
mm-hmm.
and set them down.
Okay.
Or maybe some real big, long logs, you might have to cut them up in a shorter length where you can handle them a little better.
Is that where you'd use the chainsaw?
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Baker, you do particular kinds of work on the logging
yeah.
teams, is that right? Could you tell us a little bit about your work?
Well, like when he cut them down, we'd be there in the woods out the way, so when he get on, go out on further, we walk up there for the skidder come, and we cut the limbs off nice and smooth, and how long it is, and cut nothing out but the top, just the tip end of the top there, so when we leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go right on to another one. So until the skidder come, he get it up, and then he get it on.
Okay, so basically you neaten up the trees.
Yes, ma'am. We uh-huh. have to do that. If we don't, we may lose our job.
Why do you have to trim up the trees? Why do you have to do that?
Well, they claim they don't want all them knots on it. They want to try to have a good smooth tree when it load it a little closer on the truck and get more on it.
Okay, fine. Then if the truck takes the trees that you cut, okay, the trees are cut, they're in the truck, they've gone off to wherever they're going, where would the truck be taking them to? A paper mill?
Well, it depends on what separation you make. Normally, we have three separations. You have pulpwood, chip and saw, and ply logs. The pulpwood, they debark and chip up for paper products.
Mm-hmm.
The chip and saw, they'll debark it and saw lumber out of it. And then the ply logs, they debark it and they peel it and make plywood out of it.
Okay, and actually in the Baxley business, you do... You have two operations, right, Tony? You want to describe those?
Yeah, Danny's got the logging operation, and we got the chipping operation.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually chip. We load a little bit of longwood on our job, but mostly all chip.
Mm-hmm.
Or 90-95% is all chip. And we chip fuel wood, and we chip clean chips, and all is. And then our chips is we separate out the bark from the good chips.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more or less, it's not really debarking, but it's a set of augers, and as they move down the screens, the augers' bark is more brittle than chip, so the bark falls through the smaller holes and it goes in the fuel wood.
Okay, so the bark is used as well in your operation, but in the logs that are being taken by Danny's operation, they wouldn't be.
Yeah, the bark's carried on in the mill just like any other longwood operation or even shortwood. Mm-hmm. And there's debarked at the mill and then used there at the mill.
Yeah. Mr.
Fire,
I'm sorry.
For fuel at the mill to generate electricity, or it's sold in nurseries like your body's pine nuggets and all that, same thing.
Right, okay. Huh. Mr. Barnes, your operation's a little different from everybody else's, isn't it? Could you tell us about it, please?
Quite a bit different. I log on a small scale, and I do my logging with a chainsaw and a farm tractor. And I only log what I need to saw for this little mill across the road there. So it's a small operation, and I don't have a lot of expensive equipment. I work by myself. I do my logging alone, and I do my sawing alone. It's quite a bit different than what these other fellows here do.
What about you, Billy? Do you log for all sorts of companies, or is there one particular kind of work you do?
Well, we mostly cut for one company, but we buy a lot of private timber too. We cut ourselves.
Okay, and what is it used for?
Pulpwood, chip and saw, poles. Mm-hmm. We thin a lot of timber now.
Oh, really? Okay, now do you thin with a feller buncher?
You
do. Do you also use a chainsaw?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to have a saw to limit, you know, top it. Like the gentleman was talking about a while ago, you know, got to cut knots and limbs off of it.
Mm-hmm.
On the logs, you got to have a bigger top than you do the pulpwood. Logs got to have the 5 to 7 inch top. Usually 5 inch chip and saw, 7 inch top. 7 inch top in the log.
Now, would each mill actually tell you the heights that they take, and you cut them accordingly? Okay. What's your day like? It sounds like, you know, one, you're working outdoors. It's hot. It's kind of rain or shine weather, isn't it? You just work rain or shine.
The rain don't usually bother us too bad. It's just the lightning. If it starts, you know, getting close, we'll get out of it.
Yeah, right.
Rain, it just, a lot of times, it ain't going to bother you.
Mm-hmm. How does your day start? Because it's a long day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, could you tell us about what a day's like for you?
Well, we usually leave the house about 5:15 after 5. Mm-hmm. 5:30, somewhere in there. According, you know, if I get fuel, water, whatever I got to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just, usually if the people that's working with me, if they live on the route going to the woods, I pick them up beside the road or at their house, just wherever we can meet.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you already have the equipment out at the site?
All the machinery stays on the site.
Okay.
Sometimes we have to move it on account of people like to pick up stuff, you know.
Oh, so you still have to deal with that.
Wow. Vandalism.
Yeah, they'll do most anything. I found out if you lock your gas tanks, you know, put lock caps, lock your batteries, that'll just knock the windshield out and do other things, so you just better let them have the gas and let them go.
Wow.
It's
kind of hard to hide one of those things, isn't it?
I know a fella hit a few, and he's kind of sorry he did, because they just burned it when they found it. You know, there's a lot of things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's according to where you're at and then what you get into.
What kinds of... So when the day starts, now do you say, start out by going out to the site and checking out and putting the equipment together. And then does everybody just go off onto their particular job, or is there a particular sequence that you have to follow?
Usually just get everything ready, check the oil, gas up saws. I usually do all the chain sharpening. We got a boy at trim. I got two boys at trim, and I run the fella a bunch. I saw down too. My brother drives the truck and runs the loader.
Okay.
And we just, while he's gone, we put a loading around. A lot of times, if we got a lot of logs, like he's talking about sorting it, I'll get on the loader and sort the chipping saw out. If he, usually we sort it in the woods, put it in different piles.
Okay.
But sometimes it's hard to do if you got small places and no place to ramp it. You have to sort it some with the loader.
Right. Is it a 7-day a week job? 5 days, 6 day, or what?
It's usually six.
Six. Danny, what do you work Monday through Friday?
Yeah, we usually work
Saturday?
5 days in the woods, and then Saturday is our maintenance day. We do all of our maintenance, repairs and stuff.
Clean up and grease up and get everything ready for the next week.
Okay. What kinds of major breakdowns do you have to contend with? Everything?
Yeah, anything from flat tires to transmissions and engines and pins and bushings wore out, repacking hydraulic cylinders, things like that, and some welding, things like that.
So Saturday's a pretty busy day, too. It's
just
as busy as it would be if you were out in the woods. What kinds of things do you have to watch out for, though, when you're out there? Because it would seem you are alone as a team, and that's great, but you still have to deal with the land itself. What kinds of hazards do you keep an eye out for when you're out there?
The biggest problem we have is a yellow jacket nest or a hornet nest. You know, a lot of people think we out there in the woods that we kill a lot of snakes, but we don't. We'd probably kill 3 or 4 snakes a year at the most. But we run up with a lot of yellow jacket nests and hornet nests, things like that.
Uh-huh. Do you carry anything so that if you have a reaction to the bees, do you carry anything?
Yes, all of our trucks have first aid kits in them.
Uh-huh. And what do you do for stings when you've gotten stung? It sounds like you have.
By a snake?
No, by a wasp or a hornet.
I usually just take some tobacco and wet it and put on it.
Okay.
Depends on how, if it's a bad one, we're 10 or 12 bites, and we usually end up trying to cool the man off and carry him to the doctor or something,
That tobacco sure is good. I know that.
Yeah, you've really had to deal a lot with.
That's right. And you take the rattlesnakes, what he said. They say a rattlesnake, hear all that noise, that he'll move on out some more quiet place. He won't stay around that noise.
Huh, so basically your noise can actually drive him out, is that true?
That's right.
Yeah, the jarring of the ground and the trees falling and snakes will move. If you don't get them surrounded, if they kind of get blocked in. I've killed a few, but they usually move on out. We kill more coming out of the woods, going home in the evenings, moving out of the block where we cut.
Yeah,
really?
Then you will right there in where you're working. I've killed two snakes, and one had a tree fall on him, and the other one was already hurt, skidder run over or something.
There's a lot of hazards to logging, all different kind of hazards. I can tell you a little tale that's not not relative to industrial logging. Nevertheless, it's along those lines, and I ought to tell it. It's a true story. It happened to me when I was about 11 years old. I was raised on a farm. There were 10 head of us children, my daddy and my mama, and a coon dog and a mule. We farmed to feed the mule and the young'uns and the dog. My daddy would get up before morning, before daylight, and put this coon. We grew peanuts to start with. We grew peanuts. We had to fatten our meat hogs for the slaughter season and on the peanuts. So that was a staple crop. That's why we kept the coon dog.
Mm-hmm.
We had a problem with the coons because they loved the peanuts better than the hogs did. Mm-hmm. So my daddy would get up in the morning, and he'd set this coon dog out. And after daylight, we'd go to him. He'd be in a swamp somewhere with a coon up a tree. This particular morning, we went to him, and he was about a quarter of a mile into a swamp, about knee-deep in water to me, and I was 11 years old, like I said. And the coon was up the tree all right, but he was in a holler. And my dad had carried an axe along. We didn't have chainsaws back then. He had carried an axe along. And he allowed that coon must be in that holler. So he proceeded to cut it down. And when the tree hit the ground, the coon didn't come out. He stayed in there. So Pa says, I'll cut into the holler down below where he went in at, and we'll build a smoke and smoke him out. So he proceeded to cut into the log, and he says, you go up there at the other end where he went in at in case it comes out. But he didn't tell me what to do with that coon come out. And Lord knows I knew better than to catch him. But I didn't have to. That coon caught me. He caught me right there and bit 11 holes through and through my hand. I couldn't get loose from him. He wouldn't turn loose.
Oh,
the dog
God.
Seen what was going on, and the dog come caught the coon, and then the coon turned me loose. That night, I had to go to the hospital with blood poisoning. That's a hazard of logging now.
That's true.
That actually happened, folks. That's no story.
Has anybody else ever had that kind of thing happen to them out in the woods like that? You just brought up something kind of interesting, because I think there's really two kinds of logging, isn't there? There's logging just on the flatlands, and there's also swamp logging. Well, what are the differences, though, between the two? Billy, can you answer that?
You need different equipment in different places.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if you got a feller muncher, it don't go in boggy places, real wet places. It'll go in some, you know, mm-hmm. places. But
that's why I have to log with a chainsaw.
Yeah, okay. You wade water knee deep. You don't usually don't watch them with a gravel skidder. You got to have a line skidder. That way you can leave the skidder on dry ground, pull the cable in, and winch them out.
Okay.
Or, you know, you can go in places and you can drop your logs, pull up, winch them till you can just keep going.
Mm-hmm. If you're do you do both kinds of logging?
Yeah.
So basically, a logger can be both a swamp logger as well as
right.
one who does stuff on the
flatland. If he stays in business.
Oh, okay. You have to be. Yeah. What? How does one get contracts? You know, just how do you get the work that you do? Because you do a lot of it.
Well, it depends on what kind of job you do gets the job.
Okay. So
it's just like anything else. If you do a good job, word gets around. You know. You don't have no problem finding work if you know how. You know, if you do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of people say they couldn't find no work. I never had too much problem with that, you know, other than just wet weather. You know, you'd have plenty to do. The roads would be wet, or, you know, you couldn't get in and out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One thing, I was wondering if people had questions out here that they'd like to ask. Please, you know, feel free if anybody has questions. Yeah.
Replanting?
Okay.
Well, if the land belongs to Georgia Pacific or land, you know, timber company, they replant it. Now, landowner, it depends on whether he wants to clear it for farming or replant it. Usually he'll get a consulting firm to come in there and replant or something like that, you know, site prep and replant.
He usually will work through the county forester
right.
and have a governmental program in order to assist you to replant on a clear cut, and then they also have programs where you can regenerate a natural stand, that type of thing, through the Forest Service also.
We have select cuts where you just go in and take out certain trees and leave a stand there to grow and to reseed back and things like that if you don't want a clear cut.
Okay. That's somebody in the back with a question.
Well, I guess it was sort of answered. I was wondering how much of the reforestation was the same kind or all the same crop or whether you went for the diversity of the
diversity
there. And I think you
answered that. Yeah. A lot of it depends on what the landowner wants to do. You know, he might have a stand that's all big timber and he, you know, it's matured out. He might want to come along and clear cut that, or might have a stand and mixed where he might come in there and take the pup wood out and the big ply logs and leave his best pup wood and chipping saw to mature and grow, you know, and make bigger trees and things like that. Or might just be a stand of nothing but pup wood and go through there and thin it and leave it to grow.
Tony, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Well, a lot of times, like on GP's land now, we cut a lot of timber chipping and chip it for fuel wood. Years ago, Hudson Inn and Buckeye and several other companies planted whenever slash pine first come out, is they planted a lot of slash on real sandy ground that's not growing. We've cut a lot of trees that's 25 years old and it's not but like 5 inches in diameter and smaller. We cut 600 acres over in Willaca. They was mowing down with bush hog mowers so you can reclaim the land and replant it.
Mm-hmm.
But they planted the wrong kind of tree on the wrong kind of soil.
Normally the type of tree you replant will depend on the soil.
Mm-hmm. And, right.
And different locations of the state, we have different soil types. Get down around the Ocala area, they have these sand pines, and it's no use to plant a slash down there because they're not going to do nothing. Those sand pines will grow down there.
Huh. Mrs. Baxley, I was wondering, one of the things we ended up talking about this actually a little later or yesterday afternoon about sort of the image of the logger, and perhaps you could talk a little bit about the, a lot of people think that loggers aren't very good people.
Right, they put you down as a low class.
Why is that? And why should...
That's the part we don't understand, because if they'd stop and think what all wood does for them,
mm-hmm.
You can't do without it. You have to have it, because all your paper cups, your paper plates, everything is made out of it, just about it.
Millions of jobs held
up.
Yeah,
really.
Comes from a tree.
Yeah.
Starts off with a chainsaw.
You're writing paper, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are using these plastic bags and all now. That's just hurting everybody.
Yeah, because that cuts us down.
Cuts a bunch of people out of work.
I'll let them know about it when I go to a grocery store and they start putting mine in a plastic bag.
What kinds of things could actually be done to sort of rectify, I think, you know, the falsehood, you know, behind that? There seems to be some kind of animosity, really, between sort of an unknowing public and the people who do the work in the woods.
We had one dealer there in Ocala we do a parts business with, and he started using paper bags and we quit doing business with him. Or started using plastic bags.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They put, what was it, stone container, was it? Not stone, but...
Seminole?
No, the one in Jacksonville. That they put out.
St. Regis?
Yeah.
St. Regis.
One at the paper mill there that they shut down there for a long time.
So it's a really kind of a. Sort of a mutual education process, isn't it? You know, the more we learn about it, the more you learn about what we need to do.
Paper bags. See, uh-huh. Whenever everybody started using plastic bags, it put a bunch of people out of work.
It sure did. Not only the mill, all the employees that was working there.
You may have 400 employees in a mill, but. You got people like all of us, and we got 25 people that rely on our job, and then I don't know how many dealers got working for him, but, you know, all the way down the line, if they got 30 loggers, you know, you might be talking about another 400 people, you know?
Huh.
I know at a lot of wood yards, they get union pay, you know, on the yard to unload the trucks and stuff, and you'd be surprised how they try to hold a man up that's hauling the wood in, that, you know, that brings the wood to the mill.
Really?
On kind of this laziness. But they don't know they're cutting their own throat.
Yep. That's right.
Huh.
You'd be surprised.
If a truck goes in there at 5 minutes till noon, they want to unload him.
That's right.
Go ahead and knock off the lunch.
Because it may be 3 or 4 minutes of their lunch that it might mess up with. So
all that is a job to them, and they don't realize you got 10 men in the woods waiting on that truck to get back.
Which that guy hauled it up there and cut and loaded might not eat no dinner just to get there, you know, try to get there for dinner.
That's right. So in a way, for some, it's become a job, while for you, it's still your life work, isn't
it?
Right.
Yes.
And that trucker's got to sit there an hour and wait for him to finish his lunch before he can get that truck back to the woods for everybody to load.
Huh.
I think it, the union, you know, I ain't got nothing against the union, but I think it caused a lot of problems in different things.
Yeah.
Because they get, you know, paid so much hour, and they don't care as long as they punch the clock.
That's right.
They can sit behind a box car or run a loader, it don't make no difference to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had some comment?
Plastic bags, there's another ecology problem,
is
they're not biodegradable.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's right. Why I think we have, when we're talking about traditions and the importance of traditions, here's one that's an occupation that's been around forever and a day, and, you know, we have to learn more about it. That means we can learn and continue to live with it. Okay, thank you very much for spending this time with us, you know, throughout the festival. And I know we'll be talking with some of you and hearing from some of you later on. And feel free, I'm going to put... Danny brought a bunch of magazines, Timber Harvesting and Logger and Lumberman, various magazines that do cater to the forest industries from the logger. And what we're going to do is take a couple minutes break and reset up the microphones to see another use of a logger's tool. We're going to see how the saw has actually been turned into a musical instrument. So thank you very much.